Hello and welcome to episode 73 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And I'm sorry to say that we haven't got Cookie again this week, but I'm sure we will be able to kidnap him a bit next month.
Well, fingers crossed.
Fingers bloody crossed.
I hope so. I've got some torturing to go.
I thought I was using the money to hire some friggin' ninjas or something, you know.
Money? Torturing ninjas.
What? We have money?
Gold
for ninjas.
Gold-plated torturing ninjas.
Yeah. But what's that?
They sound like the archenemy of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
or a rapper.
Okay. I am not a rapper.
Anyway, moving on to the headlines this week. We've got Fox's dropping pilot season. Nintendo forecasts look a bit glum. The Magic the Gathering heading for the big screen. And Superman / Batman have been pushed back to May 2016. And the feature that we're going to be discussing is the slow death of Steam Greenlight.
But Fox is dropping pilot season. Apparently they're like, oh, we're switching to the cable development model, where, of course, they don't necessarily have fudge loads of money to mess around with things. And
obviously,
crazy stuff.
UK audiences probably wouldn't, you know, yeah, quite get what
basically
what, this means.
What happens in the US is that at a part of the year, sort of channel studios, production companies, where they kind of decide, oh, this is a bunch of scripts we've had in that we think, maybe we should make a first episode. I mean, most American shows, the first episode is a pilot episode. You don't really get that with UK shows. UK shows tend to have all been made as from, you know, once a UK show is commissioned, you just make the whole series.
We have a six episode series or something, and that's it. That's what gets commissioned.
But in the US, it's like, oh, let's try it, you know, see if we can get a balance of right actors and all that. And basically, they'll commission a bunch of scripts, and they'll be like, okay, we're going to make these into pilot episodes, so these first episodes. And these episodes won't necessarily make their way to the public first, but they'll be test screened once they're made to obviously select sample audiences. Plus, if they're getting a good feeling about them, they'll also be shown to advertisers so they can start advertising if they decide to make it into a full show. And then a whole bunch of these will end up on television at some point. And basically, once stuff's been kind of agreed that, oh, maybe we can make something out, then they start making actual episodes. And it tends to obviously then get aired from sort of like autumn.
Yeah, the entire American TV commissioning system is really weird to my European eyes.
To be honest, I think it's because of the amount of episodes.
Yeah,
because if you think about it, in order to get like a 24 or 22 episode season, each with, 45 minutes?
Well, it's more like 36 minutes because they've increased their ad breaks by so much since the 90s.
Yeah, but I mean, say for example, the reason that S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't returned to our screens yet is because they're still filming. You know,
she's mad.
To try and further explain this situation, Deadline spoke with, or they certainly got quotes from Fox chairman Keith Riley. He explained that we are abandoning pilot season, not pilots, Riley stressed. Pilots are still a helpful tool, especially on the comedy side, but the alchemy is fragile and you really need the casting to inform your decision on the project. But going forward, he said, we will be ordering pilots geared towards series. He said that, and that means picking up fewer pilots, which is the cable model. Riley said, instead of making 10 pilots hoping to get one series on the air, I'd like to make it more 1-to-1 ratio. So fewer pilot episodes and less roles for actors to break in on as well. And also, it obviously means they'll be buying fewer scripts.
I'm not sure if that Fox are the right company to be.
Because we were talking about it last year, some of the stuff they had been like commissioning pilots for, like it was just seeming a bit crazy. And the regular approach so this, I mean, there's a difference obviously between sort of cable network or whatever, but the regular approach for people like Fox and I suppose, what, Warner or something, is it's quite scattergun.
Yeah, it's just, go out and do these things and then we'll have a look at them and hate them and tell you to, you know, completely break everything that's precious to you about the series.
I mean, in some ways, looking at how quickly they do turnarounds, though, in some of these series is quite amazing. When you talk to somebody like, say, I know James Henry over here, and talking about the commissioning process to get onto any of the main television channels in the United Kingdom, and it's like, it's years before anything could bloody happen. Whereas in the US, it's like, oh, something's hot, somebody pitches, somebody gets to, it's like they do an elevator pitch, they like the elevator pitch, they're asked to write new treatments, like the treatment, okay, we're gonna, you know, plot outline or whatever, all right, okay, go, you know, write pilot and so forth. And it's just kind of like, you don't necessarily get that process here, but then we've never been making that many original sort of television series in a year anyway, so
yeah,
and certainly nothing of the size that many US channels tend to approach. But of course, something like the cable networks, I mean, there's a saying, oh, they're going towards the cable development model. And basically, it's kind of like, well, somebody like HBO, obviously they don't tend to be, I mean, they might do sort of pilots and that, but they sort of, they obviously produce far fewer.
And stick with
series.
Them.
And then stick with them.
Mm-hmm. Although saying that, I think 6 Feet Under, that was HBO, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And that was full season, like 24 or 22 to 24 episodes, wasn't it?
No, it's a like a 12-episode season.
Right, okay.
It's like Game of Thrones. Well, it wasn't six. Yeah, it was definitely 12. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because obviously only the bigger kind of networks like Fox and stuff that isn't necessarily on cable in America.
Or just on cable.
Yeah, just on cable in America can get away with larger seasons, whereas the cable networks like HBO and stuff, I think it's Showtime.
Yeah, Showtime's cable.
Cable as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, that's like Dexter, which is also, you know, 12 episodes per season. And, yeah, it's quite interesting how the length of a season is kind
of
different.
But then at the same time, the cable channel productions tend to be considered of, like, a higher quality a lot of the time because it's almost like it's all concentrated. Far more like the actual, you know, creative team production.
Yeah.
Recently, definitely. I'd say.
I think
I can't remember the last Fox series that I actually really, really enjoyed.
Tumbleweeds.
American Horror Story is Fox, but I don't know if you've seen
it. I haven't seen American Horror Story yet. I was looking at a cheap box set the other day, but it wasn't as cheap as I'd liked.
I mean, even Futurama moved to Comedy Central.
That's because of the cancellation deal.
But it seems to be, if you're on a network, you have the possibility of getting more episodes out of it than cable. But if you're on a channel, especially Fox, which you know, famously, you know, they're famously bad at cancelling. I mean, all you need to do for that is to look at the intro that the first new episode of Family Guy when it was brought back.
Yeah. The amount
Was he? Oh, bad luck, we've been cancelled. Oh, but if they cancel these series and then it rattles off all these other series, you know, if they get cancelled, we might get a chance to come back.
I liked Greg the Bunny more than Family Guy.
Yeah, Family Guy is very.
Seth Green one as well, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I swear Seth's got some kind of like masochistic kind of element to him when it comes to TV production.
What about Joss? He kept going back to Fox. It's like, good, no, Joss, no, not Fox. Joss Whedon is doing a new series for Fox. Oh, God, why? Why are you doing it again, Joss? You're not only doing it to yourself, you're doing it to us too.
Well, then perhaps he, you know, secretly hopes that it starts out on Fox and then gets moved to another network. So he's basically just using Fox as a launch pad. Maybe.
Except it's more like a torpedo.
Times it is, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Firefly and Dollhouse, those never moved.
Oh, you bastards. No, I'll get too angry and upset if I think about those again.
You know,
no, I still remember True Calling because that that got cancelled on the Christmas episode when it was actually getting quite good, when there's like an anti hero, as it were.
An evil leaper.
Yeah, basically a villain.
So to speak.
That actually kind of goes through the day again and decides to actually kill them. Make sure that they stay dead rather than, yeah.
That was a series which I enjoyed while I watched, while I watched it, but it was because it was something to watch.
And I believe it was Zach Galifianakis, that I can't pronounce his name.
Galifianakis,
who was in that one as well, and nobody would recognise him.
Because he doesn't have the excellent beat.
Now, compared to what he was like in True Calling.
I'll have to look back at that now. Mm. I had no idea he was in it. Okay. Yeah, that wasn't bad, but it was that series was very much a kind of a filler.
Roswell also got cancelled before it kind of properly wound up, but that was because of the effect of Smallville.
Yeah.
Basically, the Smallville becoming as popular as it did early on meant that it was a bit awkward to have a two series about quite prominent alien shenanigans kind of going on in small town America.
Well, I think it was a super pad thing than anything else.
If only that applied to sports. So, I'm sorry, we've already had a football match on. We can't possibly show another one this month.
That would be amazing.
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
I think I'm going to move us on to our next story now.
Knuckles.
there was some sad news last week as the latest financials from Nintendo were called in, and they basically have had to downgrade a whole lot of their forecasts from their latest financials. So they kind of slashed their Wii U sales forecast from 9 million units to 2.8 million.
Which is fairly bloody awful.
Yeah, which is less than a third.
3DS wasn't as drastic. It was kind of like, I think it was from something around 18 million to 13 odd million. But basically, they're not doing as well in the US and EU as they'd planned for. The selling bundles apparently hasn't helped them, because obviously making less money, and again the price markdowns haven't helped as well. They made a loss basically for the last year.
What was that, the loss again? It was about 700 million or something.
Something stupid, yeah. But people who are like, don't look at the badness of this and everything. It's like, oh, they've got money in the bank, And it's like, well, you can only...
The point is not to have money in the bank, but the point is to put more money in the bank.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's well done. Yeah, they've got money in the bank, but it's like they no longer have a job and all the bills are due.
Yeah. I think the huge problem, I think I've probably said this previously, but the biggest problem certainly with the Wii U, I mean, you can argue, oh, it's because it's going up against the PS4 and Xbox One. That's not the issue.
No.
Because it's aimed at a different mentality of gaming anyway, which is marked between family gaming and the nostalgic gamer.
Multiplayer
gaming.
Yeah.
Or in the same room multiplayer gaming. And people who generally want to not be all about the blood, guts and gore of gaming. You're people who just want to have fun, and it looks
fun. Gaming's quite interesting from a retailer's perspective, because the amount of under 18-year-olds that come in and, you know, get their parents to buy them GTA or Call of Duty and all these, you know, kind of mature-rated games. And then you get, you know, obviously there's like the 30-plus, you know, male gamers that will come in and kind of buy the same. But then there's plenty of other ones that will actually come in and buy like a Wii U or...
Or
3DS.
Or
3DS, yeah. Or, you know...
May I query the plenty of other...
Well, funny you should say, I did actually have one person that played... Sorry?
Be careful.
About what? Oh, right, yeah. That played on a Wii U at a local gaming bar. and decided to actually buy one based off their experience on that. So I think to a certain extent, at least anecdotal evidence of mine would support the idea that part of the reason why it's not being sold is because there's not enough people actually going to try one.
Or necessarily understand what it is. And basically, this is the failure of the marketing. The marketing's been appalling.
The marketing has been awful.
It's like, oh, we've got this gamepad thing. And it's like they haven't really properly demonstrated what that can do for a game. But then in anything, actually, it's not the selling point for me of the Wii U. It's kind of cool. No. But the thing is, it's got better graphics than the Wii.
Yeah.
And it's got more titles now than the Wii, because it's got the combination of you could play Wii games on it. Mm. And you got the Wii U games.
But then there's another failure there, because can you download Wii games from the Wii U store?
Not yet.
Mm.
I mean, technically speaking, I don't think there's any GameCube titles to actually download as well. And that's actually a pretty big failure on Nintendo's part as well, considering there's no backwards compatibility to the GameCube even.
Which is idiotic, because the hardware is a direct descendant of it. As I've said before, when they removed GameCube backwards compatibility from the Wii, which was just, why did you do that? Because you've got a back catalogue of games, including some, you know, extraordinarily highly rated Nintendo stuff.
Mm.
Byte size, a download size, you know, file sizes, because the discs were only about, you know, 1.3 or 1.4 gigabyte.
Yeah. Yeah,
you've got those ready-made. Why the hell isn't it, one, backwards compatible, two, available on the Wii U store? And one of the reasons for that is because they didn't make the triggers on the joypad analog. And, of course, they're analog on the GameCube, so the games wouldn't work properly.
Well, you say that, but I think the bigger failing is actually on PlayStation's part with the PSP, considering the fact that it's only got two trigger buttons rather than four, which means that, you know, playing certain games,
Final Fantasies on the PSP can get rather interesting, especially for trying to run away from enemies.
On the Vita though, you use a back panel.
Mm. That makes sense. That's
a touch panel. So the back panel left and back panel right become R2 and L2 on the Vita. So yeah. That, you know, that's granted, but you can remap the controls. It's just I can't see any way around having analog triggers on the GameCube control. Now, I'll give an example of, you know, I've been a slightly naughty boy, but I will defend myself on this. I've been fiddling around with soft modding my Wii.
Okay.
For my own purposes, I plugged in a the hard drive I replaced with from my PS3, and only using my own games. I specify that because I, above all else, I am a collector. These are my games.
Yeah.
So I've been playing around with these. I've now got all my GameCube and all my Wii games available from a hard drive on my Wii. And it's fantastic, because I'm playing Wind Waker again, and I'm playing F-Zero GX and, you know, things like that. And I'm finally sitting down and sinking some time into the Wii adaptation of Pikmin.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, I'm going to have to get this game, I'm going to have to get that game, because, you know, Pikmin 2 got re-released on the Wii, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to get that. So, you know, there's all these things, and I'm thinking, now, if I went and got a Wii U, if it was at, you know, the trigger price for me, which would be about 150 quid, yeah, I know. I wouldn't be able to play any of these games unless I had the discs, which I do for the, you know, the Wii games. But then that means all, you know, all the GameCube games I've got, they still wouldn't work. So I'd have to keep the Wii plugged in. So what's the bloody point?
Mm. Well, I mean, our Wii isn't particularly fantastic because of that one incident of it kind of dying.
Yeah, that's
a bad thing. I managed to fix, but you can't. It doesn't really like you plugging in GameCube controller into the port, so which is why we actually have the Wii U and the GameCube, so that we kind of get the best of both worlds.
It's sort of shifted downwards and upwards.
Yeah.
So you've got, but yeah, yeah. Now, the thing is, I would love the fact if I could, because I know you can plug in an external hard drive on the Wii U, can't you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be the same kind of thing. That would be great, because this was a hard drive that I replaced. I upgraded my PS3's hard drive to a 1 terabyte and used its old 120 gig in an enclosure, and that's what I'm using. Yeah. But once again, it's just why are Naughty Methods giving me the kind of experience I want? And Nintendo seem dead set on not giving anything approaching that through legitimate means. Why can't I go onto the Wii U is supposed to be the go-to place to get Nintendo. You can't use GameCube on it. You can't download Wii games. Now, a lot of places are still selling Wii games, but it's getting to be quite a sparse selection now when I've had a look. Yeah. A lot of it is just the party games and things like that, and some of the really big recentish Nintendo
and 50 copies of FIFA.
Yes, and 50 copies of FIFA, which I'm never going to touch. No. But it's just, why can't I just plug in a hard drive on the Wii U and buy GameCube and Wii games and have all that Nintendo lineage right there? And it's maddening. I've been watching Hulu stuff. And over Christmas, of course, they were showing a hell of a lot of Nintendo adverts. Okay. And every single one of them was, I'd be surprised if they were teen children.
Yeah.
Say, it's time to upgrade. It doesn't say how. It doesn't say how it's an upgrade. It just says upgrade to Wii U. Mm. It doesn't say these are high definition now. It doesn't say anything like that. It just says upgrade to Wii U and we can play all these things, and we can play Mario, and we can play this against this other family who have been saying that you're not good.
Yeah.
And you can get fit. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, Christ on a bike. This is what they're selling the Wii U with. And of course, the answer is, with these financials, this isn't what they've been selling the Wii U with.
Because it obviously hasn't been working. But there hasn't been any cool so far. Nobody's said anything officially. Oh, we're going to, we're going to tackle our image problem over this console. As in, there is no image, actually, basically.
Yeah, what struck me was that in December 2013, they were still apparently trying to get across to people that the Wii U is an upgrade. Mm. From the Wii. Yeah. And it's just, they had two E3 showings before launch, and with each of those, their share price fell. Wasn't that a bit of an indication that they were misjudging the whole thing? I still think if they'd got the Wii U hardware on the shelves for about 150 quid, sold the controller. I'm not interested in the controller. If they just had the Wiimote with, Motion Plus and the Nunchuck. We keep that, and you can use a GameCube-type controller, the Pro Controller, as they call it. Mm. If they'd done that and got it on the shelves for, roughly the price of the PS3 and the 360 was at the time, then they wouldn't have had the problem. Their problem was that they massively overpriced it, and then within months, the next-generation machines, which were, are far more powerful, I don't care what anyone says, all the devs have said, the Wii U is roughly, plus and minus PS3, 360 with some pluses with, things like RAM. Mm. But it's about that level. It's not going to compete with PS4 and Xbox One. And that's the kind of price they've been trying to flog it at. And yes, they've cut the price, but it's a bit late now because they scared off the early adopters, and the developers have had their fingers burned. Because why should they chase a console which has got such a small base now in comparison to machines that have been on the shelves for a month or two?
I disagree that the Wii U needs more power. I know that wasn't quite what you were saying, but
Let's put it this way.
In terms of price point, I kind of agree that, you know, maybe the Wii U should have actually been a lot lower priced than...
The thing is that in order for them to have made the change of the not shifting with, say, the game pad, you know, the touch game pad, it would have involved them shaking up the development process for themselves, first party, and for any second and third party, because most Wii U games, you do, for the single player experience, you do have to play them with the game pad.
Well, I mean, if they would have shipped the Wii originally without any controllers, I think it would have had the same problem, because all of the, you know, games for the Wii relied on having the controller, so it was almost like a necessary part of it, a bit Kinect that was with Xbox.
Ah, sod Kinect. I think that the massive problem for Nintendo with the Wii U is the controller, because they've tried to make it. Yeah, they've tried to make it such, you know, a selling point. Mm. And it's, to me, it's not the selling point, but to other people, it confuses them, because I have seen people say, oh, this is, you know, I've got the new, you know, Nintendo handheld. Mm. And say, no, that's the controller. It's not a handheld. And that thing costs so much for them to manufacture. What's the RRP for just... the controller itself, it seems like $150, isn't it?
I think so. It is quite expensive. And
yeah.
I think that's what they need to work on, reducing the cost of the controller itself.
To me, it should have been, again, you know, this is an ideal kind of world. The Wii U should have been about 150, 270 quid with Wiimote and / you know, optional extra analog triggers. You know, joypad, and sod this, you know, the controller, because the controller, people don't get it, and it adds far too much to the cost. Nintendo have said it's the cost of the controller,
yeah,
which means that they can't reduce the price. Dump it. Yeah, people might like. I mean, you know, you might like it, and I have heard some nice uses for it. But for what it adds to the machine, and for what it costs. For what it's costing Nintendo to keep having to sell the, you know, the machine to the levels they are, when it should be a lot cheaper. If it was cheaper, it would be selling. An HD version of the Wii, with more grunt, and get some more, you know, older titles downloadable on the store, and there'd be people going, "Yeah, you know, I'll go that way." But it's just they seem to have focused on the fact, oh, we need a gimmick to sell.
And to be honest, I would quite plainly disagree with you on the whole tablet thing. Because as far as I'm concerned, in terms of graphics, it's kind of got to the point where most of the more interesting games are actually done with art style rather than graphics. Realism and whatnot. Basically, upgrading just to a high-definition console from a standard-definition console, it isn't a big enough leap for me to take. Now, the gamepad itself is far more unique. And I've done a video of, you know, five things that I'd love to see on the Wii U.
Mm.
And I'm genuinely passionate about, you know, those things. You know, I can see that the tablet controller is actually like a brilliant idea. It just needs to be fully realized. And I don't think a lot of developers are actually realizing that.
Because it's not in their best interest to try it. Because it costs. Also, right. How much did you pay for your Wii U?
I bought it on launch. We got the Zombie U bundle.
Yeah.
And it was 32 gig.
Yeah, the premium Zombie U bundle. Can't remember. What was it? I think it's almost £300.
Now, if I came to you and I said you can have the Wii, you know, the Wii U, and you can have the games, you know, you've got now for £150, but if you give me £140 more, I'll give you this controller that's got a screen on it, and you can do these, you know, instead of it appearing on the TV. These things will appear on this, you know, touchscreen controller. Would you say? Would you jump at the chance of paying £140 for the controller? Or if I said, on the other hand, if you've got a 3DS, you could pair this with it, and you could do the same things on the touchscreen on that.
But then the whole thing with the touchscreen, obviously, is the single screen play, as in, like, you can take it, you can go and just play it, some of the games, not all of them.
It's not just that, but the 3DS, because I don't believe it has a high enough Bluetooth rating, I don't think I'd actually be able to stream standard definition content to the tablet, to the screen.
I reckon it would be able to stream at the resolution of its screen.
Not like, you know, kind of almost instantaneously. There'll be a delay because of the, lower, specs on the wireless on it.
But then you've got the touchscreen controller on the Wii U. It's not a smart device. Everything on it has to be rendered by the Wii U.
Yeah, but it's almost like a server and a...
Oh, yeah, I know that. But it's just, you know, these things, if they were issues, they could have worked around them. They could have done it slightly differently or, you know, just something like that. A lot of that functionality could have been done on... Because I'm thinking back to I played games... on the GameCube with, you know, the GBA link cable, which, I'll be frank, was a bit crap.
Yeah.
But, you know, for some of the things I worked on it worked really well, like NES games, Animal Crossing, and the maps on Wind Waker.
Oh, actually, and Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles was better when you had the Game Boy Advance hooked up.
That's because you can have multiple...
Yeah. Yeah.
But you've just come across an interesting idea, because if they actually had a wired version of the touchscreen controller, that would reduce the price of it, potentially. Yeah. But you'd still have pretty much the same functionality.
Yeah.
That would be a better idea than scrapping it all together, I would think.
It's just, to me, when I played on, Wii U's. When I played with them, the point of me playing the games on them and what I would want to play, on the console and how I would want to play them, the controller doesn't really come into it there.
It does quite a bit when I like to play with it, and the fact that you can actually stream Netflix to the controller itself, stuff like that, so that you can have somebody else watching whatever they want to watch, and you can just watch Netflix.
I like that. I can on the Vita.
Yeah, fair enough. But, sorry, you were just going to say?
No, it's just, I know you like the controller, but if it was as an optional extra instead of sold as part of the whole experience, because that's what's ramping the price up. Nintendo, I reckon, could easily chop about £80 off the price of the Wii U if it wasn't for that touchscreen controller.
They would have to potentially redesign things like the home screen and stuff a bit.
Yeah, they would.
But I
think it could be worth it, because everything I've heard from, people in various positions, I'll just put it that way. When it's come to, working with the Wii U and, using the controller and things like that, the controller is nice. I say, well, it can do this, but it's a bit, if you want to do half of those things, you could either link it to a tablet or you could use the Wii, the 3DS, that kind of thing. It's just...
I'd still maintain that you wouldn't be able to use the DS in the same way because of the limitations of the thing. But in terms of the tablet, I think that's what Microsoft wanted to do because...
Ask me what I think Vita of that.
But yeah, both Vita and, Microsoft Glass, I think it was meant to be?
Yes.
Was meant to be like the equivalent of that, which would have been good news for Nintendo, because it would have made more developers actually get on board with using, a touchscreen pad like that for,
games but the, more. Yeah, the bad news about that is that I'm not interested in using, in pairing up anything I have. It's like, because I've got iPod, I've got a phone, all that kind of thing. I could borrow a tablet if I really wanted to, from in-laws. But I don't care enough.
I'm going to move us on now. because there was
it's probably wise, otherwise I could just keep picking up the corpse.
So it was announced last week.
I would say the corpse of the Wii U, not of Nintendo. Nintendo will continue.
It was announced last week that Fox have bought the rights from Hasbro for Magic the Gathering on the big screen. Basically, they have the rights and they want to do something with it. They have brought on board Simon Kinberg to produce the adaptation of Magic the Gathering to the big screen. Kinberg, you may or may not realise, has previously worked on the screenplay for Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes. He's also worked on screenplays for Jumper, which was appalling. But he's also worked on the screenplay for X-Men Days of Future Past, obviously, though we don't know what that is like. But it's kind of like a lot of the stuff he's worked on, he's not been the sole writer on these films, but he's also been in a producer role quite a few times as well. And basically, for those of you somehow who don't really understand, Magic the Gathering is a trade carding game.
Usually played by big hairy men.
It's been going since, what was it, 93? It's published by Wizards of the Coast. And it tends to involve two players playing against each other, sometimes more, but normally regular matches or is it standard or whatever, involve two players who have a deck of cards each, which have various things in it, and they battle each other using these cards and to lose virtual health points. And the person who loses all their health points first or cannot do anything and will never be able to do anything again because their deck has essentially been immobilised by the opponent's cards. The person who, you know, does all this immobilising wins. Or you could end up with a draw depending on how things go down.
I mean, you could just play Snap.
It does make me think that there have been like fan-made trailers in the past of like stuff like Minecraft the movie or Tetris the movie. And those did seem quite cool when they were fan-made and whatnot. But Magic the Gathering, I'm not entirely sure will work.
Well, the thing is that, like, up until, I think, maybe around, maybe 2005, 2006, certainly no later than that, they were certainly quite big on pushing, like, a new bit of lore or backstory for every new major sort of, like, set release or whatever they call it. So there was like, there was a proper background and story going on. Like, there were actually events happening in the world that the cards were based on, because the cards were always meant to be a sort of virtual representation, an avatar of a fantastical world in of themselves.
Yeah, some things happen so we can sell you some more cards.
Yeah, so it's, you know, some big events.
The cynic in me.
Yeah, and they did have novelizations of Magic the Gathering sort of major storylines going on and stuff.
If there's one thing
like Warhammer,
this is not lacking in its lore.
The thing is, though, is that the last time this was probably properly attempted with something of a similar ilk was obviously the couple of Dungeons and Dragons movies. I saw the first one of those in the cinema. I really wish I hadn't seen it in the cinema.
I saw the GoBots movie in the cinema. I think that's probably comparable.
It didn't end well, basically. The scariest thing about this is that Fox told The Hollywood Reporter that they're looking to make it a big franchise, actually on par with Harry Potter or The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we want, but
and
we'll see.
It's like, well, you will have to A, throw some serious money at it, B, actually get a bloody story that fucking works. Because, to be honest,
that doesn't necessarily, you know, mean anything, because look at Star Trek Into Darkness.
Oh, please, no. It's still not as bad as the game that came out last year.
It's amazing we've still got this mentality, though. I mean, it's a bit like Transformers, how they had the toy, and then they built the series around it to kind of sell the toy. And this will be like a similar thing, presumably.
I assume Wizards of the Coast are hoping that they will be that thing all the way to the bank through, you know, licensing and stuff, and the fact that they might be able to be like, oh, here's like the sets that are like based on the worlds and events and shizzle that happened in the films. Go play these. And then maybe they'll make it even worse for when it sort of like gets banned from like tournament play or something. You'll be like, oh yeah, the next film's out now, so the set that you got from the previous film is now no longer playable officially. It's like, yeah, I'm quite cynical about
just that. Change everything in the rule book. No, it was all drastically needed changes, and that's why it's all changed, and that's why you have to buy another £30 rule book.
I mean, like any
flashbacks to you know, all the various role playing games I used to play at school.
I mean, like Magic the Gathering, it's not short of potential characters, places, monsters, fantastical creatures, spells, you know, all those elements that a lot of people seem to think make fantasy. But as we've kind of been suggesting with the fact that there were novelizations, but they're not on, you know, really happening anymore and stuff. The thing that we're suggesting is that obviously that the story thing that a Magic the Gathering film would need, there's not much of that around for them to draw on.
Well, it's obviously going to be like a bit of an afterthought. It's a bit like building a computer game on the mechanics and then kind of trying to work in the story afterwards, which can sometimes work, but most of the time it's like, what? That doesn't really make sense.
And I'm now just imagining what would happen if, due to, depending on how popular the film or films were, that there was like some call for some like major rules change to ensure that everyday Joes could play the card game in order to sell.
Oh, that wouldn't go down well.
I know, but at the same time, I could imagine that happening. I mean, Magic is as complicated as perhaps your deck ends up being. Like, as soon as you've got a deck that goes beyond simple attack and heal, if you get my meaning, like, as soon as you've got a deck that starts affecting the deck of the opponent, and controlling it and stuff, it's like that's when things start to get complicated. So, yeah, just imagine them changing the rules to kind of like make that kind of play less of a thing. And I can just imagine just the friggin' uproar that would just break forth and destroy the internet.
I mean, let's face it, Yu-Gi-Oh! That was a card game, and it was
the thing is that the Japanese is a special case for their media with that kind of situation, because the previous precedent obviously was Pokemon, because obviously the video games, but the card game was closely tied to the anime as well. Mm. And in the case of Yu-Gi-Oh, again, that was kind of like, that was two things created for the purpose of selling those darn cards and other merchandise. Mm. Yu-Gi-Oh's ban list situation is one that previously used to call me most in a torment when I used to care about it many, many moons ago.
When you used to care about it.
When I used to care about it.
Now it just burnt out and cynical.
Yu-Gi-Oh's weird because, unlike Magic, which is like once a particular set's like 2 years old, it's no longer like tournament legal.
Well, that's the average for the...
That's the average or something. Cards, yeah.
Tournament legal.
So you can't play them in tournaments, but you could obviously play
presumably privately. Arrest that man, he's got old stuff.
basically. Whereas in Yu-Gi-Oh! It's always been like, oh, you can play this stuff whenever, but if it's made it onto the banned list, you can't play it. And it's just ridiculous how often the banned list would like get changed, or they'd like put limits on particular cards and you could only have so many. And oh, God... Oh, Yu-Gi-Oh, you bastard.
it does make me want to troll slightly, like with a card game tournament, just like sticking in like Ace of Spades and, you know, Queen
no,
of Hearts.
No, what you should do with any card tournament is, I don't know if you've heard of it, but Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've played that a few times. That's tremendously fun, wrong fun. Depending on who you're playing it with and what cards they're holding.
I mean,
but it's not really a tournament game, but I digress.
But it's I mean, there are a couple of different card games kind of going around, and Magic the Gathering is probably one of the...
Well, possibly one of the original ones that's still going. I mean, if we're overlooking top trumps...
Yeah.
If we're overlooking top trumps, it's like probably the oldest trading card game going still today.
So in a way, it's kind of weird that it's taken this long to for something like that to happen.
But then it still might not happen. I mean, yeah. Frigging Kinberg's got to put together a script that's of sound mind. Mind you, I mean, knowing Hollywood and the number of films I've unfortunately had the misfortune of watching over years, like Dungeons and Dragons, you do wonder sometimes how stuff gets agreed to be made. But I suppose if they've bought the rights from Hasbro, that means that depending on the conditions of those rights and how much it costs them, because that hasn't been said, they might be like, oh god, we've got to make a bloody movie, because or else it's going to be costly for us not to make a movie.
Yeah. I mean, I reckon what they should do is basically do The Karate Kid only, but Magic the Gathering instead of karate.
Oh.
That could work when it's like, you know, a kid being bullied and, you know, because he keeps on getting his ass kicked at magic and then he gets like
for some reason
taught
I think...
by somebody that's older and wiser on how to use the deck and then goes into a tournament and wins it.
Well, how to use the deck to
believe in the land. Believe in the land. That will be one of the main lines in your version of the film.
Tap on, tap off.
Tap on, tap off.
Oh, there's a few other things I could marry with off, but I'm not.
Ooh. Gather off.
But
yes.
Yes. I think that they have a lot of work cut for them. Other movie news.
I thought he was going to say, thought you had a lot of explaining to do.
No. Other news.
Probably that too. I would say, you know, just with that whole Magic the Gathering thing, I think, can we say straight to video?
I don't think we can if they're hoping it's going to be as big as Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter. Unless, of course, like when they do like several rounds worth of test screenings and like there is no way this film can ever be redeemed, then that'll probably be straight to
DVD. I don't think it'll even be as big as the porno versions of Harry Potter or the Lord of the Rings.
That's a hard following to, you know,
there's
increase
a what?
Upon.
What?
Exactly.
The Gathering.
One Direction.
I didn't want to talk about this in depth beyond Superman Batman has been pushed back to May 2016.
Good, too crowded anyway.
Exactly. That was kind of one of our main arguments many podcasts ago. It was like when we realised that this was announced and Star Wars announced, it was like, and Avengers 2, I was just like, God, 2015's looking a bit crowded. And I mean, obviously we've recently been complaining that this year's looking a bit kind of like, where you're going to find time and money for all these things. But
I remember when I was a kid, I would love to have had, you know, just that many films out.
At the same time...
I wouldn't be able to go see them because I wouldn't be able to afford them. But
just in case anyone said that the reason it's been pushed back is because Ben Affleck apparently like broke his leg or something. I saw his agent, PR, whatever, today countering that was not true.
It's actually just sprained.
He bent it the wrong way. I'm just trying to start that.
Okay.
He got ate by a Gru.
It's not that, it's just that Batman doesn't keep to a schedule.
Okay, I was moving on to...
I hope he doesn't do the voice.
Moving on to the feature of the week. Please, because Steam had their dev days last week. And I suppose, other than people kind of like oogling over virtual reality headwear and Steam boxness and whatever, they said, oh, by the way, we're going to be slowly getting rid of Steam Greenlight. The platform within the platform for getting indie games through to full publishing on Steam through a system which was like a kind of twisted voting platform based on, you know, various talent shows and telly, only it had the, you know, again sort of general anonymity of like the internet. And oh dear god, I went onto Steam Greenlight a few times and the comments on the pages for games were just the
whole bottom half of the internet.
Yeah, it was just like, you know, games want, you had to get so many votes in order to be considered for being added to like the Steam store, and you just get so many people being like, no, this game's not worth it, but saying it in the most rude, disgusting manner imaginable, and it was just like, why? That you're just being nasty for the sake of being friggin' nasty.
Yeah, they're just being trolling little twats.
Yeah.
And that's not a new thing, and it's not unique to Steam Greenlight, but Christ.
It was pretty bad.
I mean, yeah. Can you just imagine the amount of hours of work that went into some of those games?
But I think going back more to the actual story, it's the fact that according to Gabe and all, they're getting rid of Greenlight. It's because partially looking at that they use the word evolving. Yeah. To describe Steam, it's an evolving service, and apparently the way obviously Greenlight is and works at the moment, it can't be a part of the plans. If anyone else has noticed recently, they've been greenlighting a lot of existing stuff on there in order to just get through the back catalogue of things that could to a degree be publishable. I suppose when they launched, was it like something like just over 2 years or whatever since they launched the service?
Yeah, and it's not been a happy 2 years for the service, really.
No, because there was the whole controversy of, was it people having to pay to get on it?
Yeah, and that was one of their original ways to try and stop it being flooded.
Yeah.
And that didn't work really, did it?
No. I suppose it's the fact that it's kind of weird how indie development's kind of come along in like the past 3 years or so. Because everyone saw kind of certainly what happened with the mobile scene and stuff like and Facebook apps.
Yeah, Facebook apps.
Facebook games. And it's just like, and they were just like, oh, there's just a couple that have done really bloody well. Will make, you know, and people started thinking they could make games, and the indie scene, I mean, it was already around.
But it's everyone, always been around, yeah.
But everyone started thinking more about the fact that they could publish what they were doing. And it's just like, it just seems to have snowballed. Like, the amount of game content developed outside of AAA has snowballed over the past 3 years.
I mean, to be honest, I don't see this as an exclusive problem to Steam or to the gaming industry as a whole, because once you've got something successful, people will try to copy it. We've seen that time and time and time again. I mean, there's even a film, I think it was like a film studio, that basically has a look at what's the biggest thing in development. Oh, you're talking about The Asylum? No, I was thinking, what, is that the film?
Are you talking about the lot that made Atlantic Rim?
Yes.
Yeah, that's The Asylum. So
they're basically, you know, kind of going around and having a look, see what's kind of popular, and basically just kind of doing their own version of it.
Let's do that really quickly in Ghibli.
Yeah, exactly. People won't notice.
I mean, it's kind of weird that because of the way that the internet and various digital technologies have become cheaper and more accessible, people have been more empowered to create content regardless. So, you know, you've got bloggers now in one corner doing their own form of journalism. In another corner, you've got people self-publishing to Kindle and Nook and Kobo and every other ebook store imaginable. Another corner, you've got people producing music without the need to go through a record company or whatever and still get it in front of people. And obviously things like MySpace helped kick that off a bit, at least in terms of getting publicity. And then in another corner, you've got people making web TV series for things for like on YouTube, like Freddie W or somebody like Vsauce or whatever. And then in another corner, you've got the games. Sorry. All the... Yeah, people making all these quite often quite imaginative and intriguing games of varying sizes, aesthetics, mechanics, etc.
Well, some of them are.
Some of them are. And it's just all this independently produced content. And because everything's been made, you can publish easily, basically, in comparison to days of yore. And it's just amazing just how much people have made. So much. I mean, in my day job, we work around a thing called content marketing. It's a particular way of marketing products in either business to business circles or business to consumer, but it happens more in business to business. And it's not about, you know, making people aware of your brand. It's about producing content that is meaningful and useful to potential customers and existing customers. Anyway, it wasn't a big thing like just before I started in my current job. And then, of course, my job, it's become a huge thing. And about a year ago, somebody produced this slideshare that was about crap, the content marketing deluge. And it basically describes the whole thing that everyone's now suddenly finding with self-publishing.
Yeah.
But it's happening with this particular area of marketing. And it's like the only way that concludes that anyone's going to be able to make their marketing stand out, or content marketing stand out, is they've got to produce really unique, sort of useful, specific, genuine pieces of content. Like, you've got to really make it stand out. It's got to be really high quality. And actually, the fact that a lot of stuff, the self-publishing, that looks like you're going to have to properly put the time in to produce quality stuff to potentially stand out, at the same time that you should probably be using those content marketing tactics in order to get it in front of people.
And not only that, but you've also, a lot of the time, got to be extraordinarily lucky.
And have the right connections, have the right people seeing your stuff in the first place. Like, it doesn't matter if the people who are going to buy your stuff aren't necessarily following you on Twitter, but the people that are going to tell those people about your game.
Yes, trendsetters.
Those trendsetters, they need to be following you on Twitter or on Facebook or something, or already vaguely aware of you in some corner of Reddit or whatever.
Because otherwise, with all these different things, a lot of them appearing so very similar to each other, how the hell is anything going to be standing out?
It's certainly a case of a lot of mobile games. And obviously what happened with Facebook games as well.
A brilliant example of mobile games and just, you know, all these things being the same is the success of Angry Birds.
Yeah.
Now, Angry Birds... I'll try and say this in a as legal a way as possible, was heavily inspired by previous games where you flung different things at structures to collapse them and get rid of, you know, whatever was sitting on top of or under or within those structures. Angry Birds is not an original game. It simply isn't. It's just not. It was not the first game of its type, but it was the one that got noticed. I played some of the other games that came before it, and you would think they could be from the same company, but putting different sprites, different artwork on it. And Angry Birds is the one which is almost bafflingly popular. There are soft drinks in some of the shops that I was wandering around in today. There's pajamas. There's still the talk of that film. An Angry Birds film, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the first, you know, physics-based puzzler, but it's the one that got noticed, and it's the one that people started playing because it was the one that people knew about. And whether it was because the best, or whether it was because it was just, you know, the one that stood out. Now, like you said, with the, you know, it has to stand out, it has to be unique.
Going slightly political,
hey.
Do you reckon this could be considered post-capitalism, where the means of production and means of distribution are cheap enough so that everybody can do it, but everybody wants to do it in order to get the big break?
But because everyone's doing it, nobody gets the big break, and thus the goal of capitalism is not met.
You could say that it's pure capitalism, but the problem is you'd probably need some kind of structure, which is where the capitalist complex, industrial complex comes in, because it's the capital industrial complex which would be able to, you know, throw your thing and control you know, the means of consumption and get your thing noticed. But now, how do people get noticed? You have to get bloggers on your side, you know, try and, you know, get them to notice you, probably by trying to bribe them, because everyone else is trying to bribe them, you know, one way or another.
Well, don't forget, though, with indie games, though, we have, in recent months, come to the unique conclusion that there's several indie game review websites from mobile to PC that are like, oh, you got to pay us if you want a review.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. And it's just, that's against the ethos. But I can understand entirely why there would be some people who would, you know, actually stump up for it. Because if they're putting their career on the line, if they're putting their income on the line, and they're living on money in the bank and they've been working on this thing, because I have you know, seen a few examples of this.
Well, yeah, I think Indie Dev or Indie Game, the movie, or documentary.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And there's like a couple of people behind Super Meat Boy and stuff. And awesome game.
Yeah. Oh, it's a very good game.
They pretty much lived off nothing for, you know, the entirety of development, and were pissed off when, you know, Xbox seemingly stabbed them in the back.
Yeah, but that whole thing was, you know, Microsoft were badly managing things at that point, and they've not really recovered, and I can't see how they'll do much better when the Xbox One. But yeah, with all that, I can see why people would desperately want, you know, a bit of a, you know, hitch up, and they'd want their thing to be noticed. But there's no real easy answer to anything like this, because anyone can create content, which is great. But then you've got the problem that anyone can create content, which means it's a hell of a lot of shit. And how do you notice the good stuff in between all that?
It's not just that, but there are some good stuff out there that don't get the views because they're not connected enough.
Exactly. Mm. They're not connected. They haven't had the luck to be noticed and pushed to the front. And what are you going to do? Mm. You know, as a consumer, it sucks. As someone who would be creating this stuff, it would suck far more, because, you know, for me, it's, oh, well, that thing that looked promising, there's not going to be another one, even though I love it and I've told all my friends about it. Mm. But, you know, for them, it's, well, they might have to, you know, give up trying to do what they're doing and just get a, you know, a salary job.
Yeah. I mean, thinking of, you know, kind of stuff on YouTube, I've noticed that, you know, all of the, you know, good quality stuff that I kind of subscribe to, and then they've got like millions of followers already. And it's basically because, you know, obviously the more subscribers something has, the more it's going to get featured. So actually kind of getting to the, you know, kind of the good quality content that is less well known is still quite difficult.
I mean, a good example of how wrong it can go is that quote-unquote YouTube successful comedian who was going around being a sexist bastard at, you know, Eurogamer Expo and got a lifetime ban for it.
Yeah.
And he gets millions of views on YouTube, and fuck knows why. I mean, I can answer that because people are stupid. But you know, it's just that kind of thing. It's, you could create, you know, the most beautiful, perfect thing, and if it doesn't get noticed, that's it. You're just gonna die in obscurity.
Mm.
But some wanker can get, you know, can do something provocative and get millions of followers.
Yeah, and I think that's the tendency nowadays, is to do something that's provocative.
Yeah, and far be it for me to suggest that, you know, Zynga was going around stealing other people's ideas and packaging them as, you know, as their own. But that's kind of, you know, the whole collapse of the Facebook game market has bitten them in the arse, hasn't it?
Mm.
Because they were basing their entire income, their entire future on Facebook being this massively successful ecosystem. I simply could not see how it could, you know, keep going on as it was. And lo and behold,
Yeah.
Look how many studios and people they've had to close and fire.
I was just trying to formulate in my head, just kind of, not a summary about this, but just an observation. And so we've talked about the fact that everyone's producing content now. Pretty much. We're producing content right now, recording this.
Yeah.
And I know very well how saturated the podcasting market is. It's insane, the number of podcasts out there now. Like, the popularity of them's like really increased in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
And so getting noticed for any media is really difficult. But one thing, and we sort of said it a bit earlier, but that seems to be a huge part, is the whole networking angle, but it's not just online. I find that people who are able to get to kind of like cultural hotspots in their countries, their stuff tends to be better. So if you do manage to make it to events in London, over here, your stuff's going to do better. If you're in the US, if you get stuff in New York or LA or San Francisco or something, your stuff will do better. If you can't make it to those kinds of events and you're an independent content creator, your content potentially doesn't have a chance of actually getting anywhere beyond like your circles of friends and family.
Which is, it's kind of ridiculous as a concept, because part of the point of the web is that you can be in the most remotest place on Earth, and as long as you've got an internet connection, you're connected to everybody, theoretically.
Yeah, but it's the whole... It's the age-old problem of people you know and getting the right people to know you.
I mean, if you want to have some more of my day job thrown in, from a data perspective, an analysis of like different marketing techniques that marketers tend to feel are most effective... Well, the most effective techniques that tends to keep always ranks in like the top five for most of the like these benchmarking reports people will do, where they're like, oh, this is what's happening in business to business marketing now. But for business to business marketing, in person events are always ranked as one of the top most effective techniques for getting for effective marketing. So being at an in person event, having like a trade store, or like doing speaking at an event, and being at an event and meeting people is one of the most effective pieces of marketing they can do.
I noticed a lot of that at the Eurogamer Expo.
I can imagine that obviously for indies trying to get some like Eurogamer packs, I suppose, as well, if you can get in there and exhibit, it is key to getting the word out. But again, this is the whole thing, that you're having to go to these really centralized places in order to get noticed. And again, it's kind of like making those of us who either can, with much difficulty, get to capitals to sort of put forward things to the general public, and those who can't. It's a bit unfair, is basically what I'm saying. But,
It's the internet is it's democratized a lot of it, but in order to get where you want to go in the first place, you've either got to be extraordinarily lucky, or it is the old problem of glad handing.
Yeah.
And the old boys network.
Oh man.
So it's a massive pin in the ass.
But it's quite disheartening in a way if, you're kind of struggling to do, kind of a product, especially if you're trying to do it regularly and you don't have the viewing figures and you don't have the audience. And sometimes you think, why do I bother doing this? It's caused me more hassle than it's worth. And just keep at it, because you will steadily get, more people. Because obviously you'll hear stories about almost instant internet success with, some people, like on YouTube, that have, have like two or three videos, and suddenly they've, got thousands and thousands of followers
or subscribers. A good example here would be that couple who used the PS4.
Yes.
And streamed the the camera app, which it was never intended for. But they got internet famous for a little while, and you know they've been able to you know from what I can gather they've been able to you know the things that they were doing anyway get retain a little bit of that audience.
And I think that's something that we struggle to do sometimes on like Hex and Nerds is we try and make sure that our content goes out on a regular basis so people know that, you know, we'll have a daily thing on Hex or we'll have a weekly thing on Hex.
And then obviously this podcast is weekly. But yeah. Sometimes we might do extra episodes to complement it.
But yeah, overall... that's one of the things that, you know, you kind of have to get your head around as well. I mean, I think, was it VG Cats? That was a brilliant webcomic, but it was put out so irregularly that, you know, I kind of just stopped going to it because, oh, well, there's no new content out. Okay, come back in a week later. Still no new content. Okay, come back a week later. Oh, one new comic. Okay, read that. Okay, and then have to wait another month for another piece of content to come out. And... yeah, you can't keep subscribers like that, I don't think.
So what are we basically saying about the democratization of content creation and how the slow death of Steam Greenlight is just a sign of the times? What are we saying?
I think that it's basically saying that we've solved one problem, but created another in its place.
Yay!
Yep. It's like now everyone is... just as loud as everyone else. But the problem with that is you cannot hear anyone.
Yeah.
Unless you happen to be close to them.
Hence,
which kind of defeats the entire bloody point. But there you go.
Yeah. So that's all we've got time for this week, I'm afraid. So it's goodbye from...
it's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm a retroid on Eurogamer.net and super retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
As good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter as EK6891. You can find NerdAssemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, plus we're on Facebook and Google Plus as NerdAssemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out hexdimension.com. Also, speaking of indie games, so we've got a review of Nidhogg for PC up on the site at the moment. And if there's an indie game that's been a long time in development that also managed to get exhibited a lot, that's also really good. You just go read the review and then go buy it. Okay.
Suddenly everyone was talking about that last week.
It's a bloody good game. Mm. Played it back in 2011. But anyway, go check out the review, guys. Just go. That's all. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. We'll be right back.